Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Playbreakers podcast. My name's Gatto. I am joined by Tom and Q. You fellas doing today?
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Very excited to talk about the combine today. A lot of good shit happened.
Awesome. Is that how you spent your weekend? How'd you spend your weekend, Tom?
Very ill, actually, but on the couch watching the combine.
The perfect thing to watch when you're feeling down.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I watched the combine. I watched that that Adam Sandler movie on Netflix, Spaceman. It was okay.
I saw that. I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, it was a little too
Adam Sandler-ish.
Yeah, and I'm like, of course, you found another way to wear basketball shorts just in space now.
I'm sick of him.
What about you, Gatto? What'd you do?
I didn't do much on Saturday. It was kind of terrible weather here in New York. But I went out for beers to a Long Island Farm Brewery and, had a couple pops in me. So that was a good time.
Love that for you.
Thank you.
Very nice. Well, all right. So we're going to get into some of the reactions to the NFL Combine. A lot of really impressive displays from some of the prospects that are in this year's draft. A lot of guys that really, really impressed, but also there were others, like the top guys that, you know, they didn't do any of the drills. Some of them only interviewed, some of them just did measurements. Marvin Harrison, from my understanding, just did measurements, didn't do interviews with the press or the media, took private meetings with teams, didn't do any of the drills either. But, I mean, that's kind of expected, right? But first and foremost, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but I think we need to do a little bit of NFL free agency conversation right now. What is going on in Denver? Russell Wilson has just been cut from the team.
They basically said it's done. So they're going to take the largest dead cap hit in the history of the sport.
Like $85 million. I mean, that's an insane number. To be like, yeah, we give up
$1 million.
Yeah, that's a bank heist.
It's like a Dr. Evil moment.
Cool, because if you think about it, like the Carson Wentz one a couple years ago was like the biggest, and it was like $22 million, and that was like seen as like, oh my god,
yeah.
And now it's like it's barely anything. I just think that because the cap is going up, they're just willing to take their medicine. I just don't know what is their plan quarterback wise. I'm not really sure. So.
Yeah, man, I don't really know either. I just saw that, and I knew that, like, Sean Payton better have a plan, because this is now two teams that he has basically put into cap hell. And my every indication of what happened last year did not prove to me that he was, like, the genius that he was in the early parts of the New Orleans playoff run.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, like what you said, Q, are they going to have to find a quarterback? Are they going to try and sign one? Like, is Baker Mayfield somebody who they're considering? I just don't know if there's a ton of options out there in free agency. And then the other option is finding somebody in the draft, which I just read a mock draft on NFL.com. They have them taking JJ McCarthy. So. I mean,
yikes. So it depends on, I mean, the thing is, though, I will say is that Sean Payton has always had a very like eclectic view on quarterbacks, because you got Breeze and then you got a guy like Taysom Hill. So Bo Nix is a guy I could see being his interest, you know, like studious dude, long time in college football, a lot of starts under his belt. I just don't know, though. I honestly, I'm not sure what they do there, but like, it's clear that like Russ was not in the plan, and they, you know, him giving that interview too, basically saying that like, yeah, they wanted me to take off my injury protection so they could like cut me, basically. Pretty damning stuff, honestly. Sean Payton, real dirtbag type stuff. I'm glad he didn't, by the way. I'm glad they're going to have to eat this because it's crazy. How do you sign a contract with somebody and then ultimately try and screw the person out of the money right to their face too? Like pretty much just staring them in the face. Interesting to see where he goes though. I'm not really sure what would be the funniest possible scenario. It's got to be Seattle, right? He goes back
to Seattle.
Yeah. Backs up Geno Smith. That would be funny.
I mean, realistically, where do I see him falling? Maybe a Pittsburgh. Maybe at an Atlanta.
I think Atlanta goes with Fields. That just seems like that's going to happen.
A better place. Yeah.
Just seems like it. But... good homecoming for him. Yeah,
Dallas as a backup.
Carolina?
Maybe.
I mean,
yeah.
They are throwing in the towel that quickly. I don't know. New York Giants?
I have a hot take on this one. I think it's also very plausible to see him not with any team. And this is kind of the end of the run. And the reason why is because the last 2 years have not been great. I mean, last year was better than the year before significantly, but not by that much. And I could also see teams saying like, all right, well, we got this like mid 30s guy who's 5'11 and has had some injuries in the past and his performance has been down. Like, we could give him a league minimum deal, or we could find somebody else who doesn't have all of these, like, I don't want to call them red flags. I call them like flashing yellow lights of like concerning stuff. And I mean, Russ has made his money. Like, if he wants to play, he can, but he also doesn't have to.
I just think that the, because of how, like, in a normal year when quarterbacks are not at like a crazy high demand, I think maybe. But like the Raiders, like you don't think the Raiders would go out and give him, you know, 2 years. And also the benefit also is because of the dead money hit and everything, his guaranteed money, mm-hmm. he can sign for the vet minimum or pretty much anywhere he goes because Broncos owe him a lot of money. So
yeah, I mean, there's definitely options out there like Raiders, although I don't know if he fits their style right
no,
now.
No, I'm just saying in general, like
New England.
New England. You know what? I think he should go to New England and then they should draft Marvin Harrison number 3. And then, you know, I mean, if the Cardinals feeling a little froggy, maybe trade the pick, go to number 6.
Yeah.
It's not a very big jump.
It's all part of all the plan.
Coming up Q.
This is all on Q's dream board, by the way.
I did ask you the other day in our group chat. And
I thought you were going to admit to having a dream board.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I'm manifesting. So Tom, it seems like an almost I asked you the other day. You may have missed it in the group chat because it looks like an absolute certainty at this point that Caleb Williams is going number 1.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
They're not going to trade him.
The Bears.
So where do you lean? Number 2, is it May or is it Daniels?
So I was looking through the, I don't know if you guys have seen this or anybody who's watching on YouTube. By the way, follow us on all social platforms and give us a like and subscribe. That'd be super huge. But I don't know if you guys have been looking at the NFL.com combine items in here where you can scroll through the next gen stats and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how accurate a lot of this stuff is, but there was some concerning things in there that they were writing about Drake May, which I don't necessarily know how much I believe because they had him listed as a boom or bust potential player.
So I have a serious issue with the grading scale on that on NFL.com because what doesn't make sense to me is that if you look at the scale on the bottom of the page, the 6.3 to 6.39 is will eventually be a plus starter. And then it's 6.4 to 6.49 will become good starter within 2 years. So it's going up, right? What plus number 1 plus starter sounds like a better than good starter. So that doesn't make sense. But then above that is boomer bust potential. How does that make sense? So you're telling me that like this guy's gonna be really good. This guy's gonna be good. This guy, I don't know. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
It sounds like their model is just
hinging
on missing data points because it's a regression based on the median average. And anytime you have that as you're going like rate system, you're already kind of in trouble, right?
It's also the NFL too. Like they're also not known for like the most heady decision makers out there too. And I feel like a lot of these are just kind of written on vibes rather than
it is a grading scale. So basically the only thing you have to take away from that is that they are basically saying the 8.0 is the perfect prospect. Like you can't get higher than an 8, right? He's a 6.5 out of 8. That's, and again, it's just a factor. I would say the write-ups are always good.
Yeah, I enjoy reading those. Those are
great. The write-ups are very good. He fits he checks all the boxes. I'm just curious though, because like you're getting one of them, you know, one of them is gonna be number two. So
yeah, and I think for me, for Washington, it's really just gonna come down to who Cliff Kingsbury thinks he can leverage and get the most potential out of. I think we talked about this last time, but I really like Jaden Daniels. My biggest concern is that dude just does not know how to slide. And we already did with that once with somebody who did not know how to slide, and it effectively ruined his career.
Sure did.
No. Having kneecaps ruined his career.
That's true. Yeah.
I would say
locate did not help either.
I would say Mike Shanahan was like, I want Kirk Cousins to start in this team. And I didn't get my way, so I'm going to destroy this fucking guy.
Yeah. But I see a lot of RG3 in Jaden Daniels play. Like, definitely can sling it around.
There's similar vibes to them play wise, for sure.
I mean, and I don't want to take anything away from Jaden Daniels. If he was the quarterback on the team, I would absolutely love it. I get very scared of guys who are. Like, they don't know how to protect themselves. Like, if he had, like, Lamar Jackson, like, instincts to slide and get out of bounds and stuff like that. And maybe it's just college and he gives a shit. But, like, I don't know, man. That really scares me because there was, like, no indication that he was willing to make changes. And he had to leave games in college because he was taking huge shots.
He takes cartoon hits.
Right. That's, yeah, like feet overhead all the way. Drake May, I think, is a guy that is really, really interesting, but they need to, I think for him, they really need to focus on coaching and keeping him calm in the pocket, because in the same way that Jaden Daniels would drop his eyes and look for ways to get out of the pocket if things were getting a little too tense in there. I've also seen a lot of like Drake May gets out of the pocket, rolls right, drifts, throws inaccurate throw, like throwing, like leaning back, throwing like that. And I'm not saying that nobody does that. I think he's one of those guys that you teach him how to throw a football effectively, get rid of that long throwing motion, and how to set his feet and how to use his feet properly. I think he'll be a solid guy. And he said that he had no problem playing with Sam Howell too. And I think Sam said, I have no problem with him being here too. So I think having
friends would
be nice. Yeah, they are friends.
Yeah, they were Brett and UNC together.
They also, I think, were in the same high school together too.
Oh, no way, really?
Yeah.
Funny.
Wow.
I agree with everything you said about Jaden Daniels. And I'm the biggest concern I have for him is what I've seen is like hitting people across, like it's the middle of the field. He seems like he has some blindness sometimes at hitting people in the middle of the field, but then also on top of that, outside the numbers, like sometimes he has a lot of balls kind of sail on him and not really like, I mean, again, this is really kind of feel like I'm like,
we're nitpicking, but
we're nitpicking because they are so good. But you have to find something like, what am I concerned about? Because you're picking between two really good guys. Mm-hmm. Daniels obviously has the experience, but May has the upside. But I mean, also Daniels has the upside too. So it's an interesting battle. I'm with you though. I actually have Drake May probably closer to QB1 than to QB3.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably say that, like, for me, May is clear number two right now. Daniels is rock solid number three. And then after that, it gets a little interesting.
I think the benefit of drafting Drake May too is that of the two guys, of the three between Williams and Daniels and May, mm-hmm. May is obviously the younger of the three. And yeah. I think if they said, we are going to sit him for a majority of the season, and then if things kind of fall off, then we can go ahead and start him. I don't think Jaden Daniels would get that kind of patience, because I think they would see him as a Heisman Trophy winner and like, yo, he's got to play day one.
Yeah. And
I wouldn't mind seeing, like, if the Commanders draft May, Sam mm-hmm. Howell start the season. If things are not working out, all right, let's play Drake, and then let's see how it goes. Give him some time to get his feet set. And I'd want that for Jaden Daniels too, but I don't think that he's going to get that kind of patience because, I mean, he's too electric to keep off the field.
I don't think you benefit anything, honestly, from having a guy like Jaden Daniels sit, because he's already had so much experience at this point.
Right.
To where if you wanted to sit Drake for a year or two, you could. And like, that's the thing. It's an interesting thing about with Sam Howell is like it's a good problem to have. If like Sam Howell goes out next year and like, let's say he gets the job right away. If he goes out there and he's like a stud, it really is an interesting problem you have. That's why I'm curious if the Commanders are thinking about trading down at all, because there was a report about the Falcons that apparently everyone's saying that the Falcons are really in on Justin Fields.
Yeah.
And like, it feels like some people are feeling like it might be like kind of back talk and that they're actually focused on a quarterback. So obviously they're not going to trade with the Giants at two, but like, do they maybe make a move with the Falcons or something like that? So, and then just maybe get like a Dunze or whoever ends up being there at eight or seven. I think they're at seven.
Yeah. I would also, and I know that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago too. I wouldn't be opposed to that either, to be honest with you, because I think like a quarterback solves a problem with this team, but the core problem that this team had last year was coaching, talent, and an offensive line. And they just did not have a NFL level offensive line. And the play calling was kind of shit all over the place, which didn't really help either. So, I mean,
always expect.
Yeah. I mean, is it ideal to trade the number two pick in the draft where you could get a quarterback and trade back and get
fucking an awful though
and get an offensive yeah. lineman and a bunch of picks? No, but I think if you want to be smart about how you're going to be able to build a team that is sustainable and it's not just pinching on scoring a ton of points. As long as there's a plan, and I think that's the thing that I'm looking at it. Like, this is the first year they've actually had a plan of what they want to do. So if they trade back and they end up getting like an offensive lineman who is a generational player, yeah, I'm good with that. If they end up getting more draft capital where they can come back in the first round and get another wide receiver, I'm also fine with that. If they can just go up, if they could trade up, and who knows, they can get Brock Bowers too. I'm also very good with that. There are a lot of options, and I think Washington is in the best seat in the house at this point, because if Caleb Williams is presumptively off the board, everybody's going to be calling Washington to see what they want for that number two.
There will be options.
But I think that both the Bears and the Commanders have already kind of decided, and they've kind of said it at this point, because they would have definitively said, we're sticking with Howell, we're sticking with Fields at this point. And both of them have said, we're still thinking it through. We're trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know,
they're just waiting for a Ricky Williams type trade. That's why they're waiting for like eight first round picks.
the landfall for that pick, I don't think any team is actually that desperate, because we'll just run through the cycle of, you know, who's taking what quarterbacks to see who pans out again next year, right? Granted, this year
guys are not
exceptional. Yeah, I get that this year the talent level is much higher, but who knows between now and then, you know, if someone really starts to shine or develop or show some true potential come next year.
If I can just provide a counter argument to that, you could have made that argument last year too, and Carolina traded up to get the number one overall pick when they really didn't have to either.
Did you guys see that list of players that they could have had if they just fucking sat?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And I applaud them for being that dumb.
My God.
But I think that's the thing too, is like, you might think that, Gatto. We might think that, like, yeah, well, all we got to do is wait one more year and then we could get somebody else. Like, there's going to be names in the draft, but those aren't here yet.
I think big draft decisions like that, also, you have to look at, like, the relative age of your team and whether or not, like, you have a lot of guys that are leaving rookie contracts and things like that before you weigh if it's even a good idea to try to move up or if this is a moment to, like, pick somebody up. If that's the case, then yes. But like, I am someone who thinks sit back and, you know, let the cards unfold. I there is always that potential chance to me that one, I like, okay, let me ask you something. Out of the top five quarterbacks in this draft, how many are really going to make it?
Probably two.
Two, right? So 40% chance, less than 50 for those five quarterbacks, that they're going to be doing significant things in this league for years to come. Mm-hmm. Right. So I they're probably on the high end of things, right? Like I sit there and I say, hey, there's still something. I was a little, I don't know, with like the whole thing with Caleb Williams, this, like with this combine, it kind of weirded me out a bit.
And he didn't do anything there.
He said he wasn't even going to weigh himself or do any of that. He didn't do any of that part of the physical.
I have a counter to that whenever you're,
but like his thing is that he doesn't care about, you know, having that information out there, or whatever, because he's only going to go to the teams that are, or he's only going to do this for the teams that he wants to play with. And I don't know why, but that attitude to me just, I feel like it's part of a bad, there's just something there that I just did not, and it could be his agent telling him to do this, but just the way that he stated it.
His dad's his agent. My thing is, I understand where you're coming from on that. I do. I think my thing is, I agree with Caleb Williams, though. I don't think that the Kansas City Chiefs should have his fucking medical records. I think it's a little ridiculous how they do things, because if you are a quarterback that's going to go in the first three picks, and like I would put my life savings and my next 3 years income that he's not falling out of the top three, right? Like, I'm that confident about it. It's if it was a bet on FanDuel, it would be -8,000 right now. Like, it's just, that's how it is. So like, why should he give his medical records to, you know, the San Francisco 49ers if there's absolutely no chance? He said he's going to be willing to take a physical and do everything with the team that will, you know, within those picks, any team that he meets with will get any medical records. So I kind of agree with him. I think people should be more protective about their medical records, honestly. And I don't think they should be just widely distributed. I feel like a lot of times this is the shit that happens with, like, you know, when guys are really good, and I feel like, here we go again, that people will I think it's like the media, they will try and find ways, little things to just hammer at it, where it might be like kind of an innocent thing he said, and then they make a big deal out of it. So
Rick Spielman was bitching and moaning that like Marvin Harrison didn't share anything either. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not yours to know. Like,
why should he? Like, he, again, another guy who's not going to be out of the top five, like top three probably. So it's like, what, you know, why should he, honestly? I think it's better than like how it used to be. I think guys are more cognizant to just giving teams whatever they want. And I think when there's more power in the hands of players, especially young guys, than the teams, it's better. It's always a better thing.
NBA ain't looking so good these days, and it's very player friendly.
So. Ratings are higher than they've ever been. Product, I mean, that's up for debate, obviously.
Product is hurting.
I mean, the season's too long for them. So, I mean, that's their problem. They always have to go up against the NBA. They always have to go up against the NFL and college football, and lose every time.
And the NFL's never going to be that. Like, it's never going to happen because it's like, it's just the entity's too big as it is right now. And like, really, like they have the least amount of power anyway. So like, this is really just giving like even a word back to them.
The other thing is too, is like, it's a supply and demand issue. Like in the NBA, you know, like of all the guys that get drafted, probably like the top seven are the ones that are really, really worth it. Right. And they're going to stick around. Right. In the NFL has a supply problem where there's too much of a supply. So if you can be replaced as soon as you make, you know, you tip out to like, okay, I'm now making $9 million a year versus when I was making $4 million a year. Yeah. They can cut me and I'm not owned worth anything.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the thing, is like the way that contracts are structured where players don't really have any true leverage, and they never really have.
You got to take advantage of it when you have it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I all of the things that happened when like all of the interview questions that got leaked about like guys' moms and things like that, and asking them really weird and uncomfortable questions. Like,
did you see that fucking nerd when Caleb Williams jumped up on the fucking podium? He started like, he's some fantasy dude who was there, and he's like, "Caleb, are you afraid to go against your other quarterbacks?" And he's just like, "No, like, what are you talking?" Like it's become like a crazy event where like anyone's invited now.
Yeah.
The fan engagement thing is very real, right? And if you're willing to pay, you're able to get those accesses, right?
Like, I just remember when this was like in an empty gym somewhere, like when it was in the old Colts stadium and there was nobody there, and they play it at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and like me and four other people in the world would watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, the good old days.
Yeah,
it's really become an event just like everything else. It's kind of wild to see.
So let's get into the combine itself, and let's talk through some things that we saw that were good, some things that were bad, some things that are worth noting. Gatto, you have a couple of visuals you want to throw up on the screen, so let's do that now. But we were all talking on the day that quarterbacks were throwing and receivers were running and doing routes and things like that. Does Joe Milton's 70-yard pass do anything for you?
No.
Nothing at all.
But that's mostly because he didn't really have that great of a showing, in my opinion. Did you guys feel that he had a good combine at all? Like, it was underimpressive. He was inaccurate. His footwork was not great.
He's going to be a really fun project for a really smart football mind out there. But I'm telling you right now, like, I would not stake my like job on like taking him in round two or round three. He's going to be one of those guys I'm going to be really interested to see where he ends up. But I'm too way too scattershot. And if you've watched Tennessee, when you watched a guy like Hendon Hooker at Tennessee, just dominate there, and then you watch Joe Milton basically with the same talent level there, other minus a couple receivers and everything like that, just really, really struggle. It told me kind of everything I needed to know.
You know who he reminds me of if this guy still played quarterback and didn't switch to wide receiver? Terrell Pryor. Kind of like the same body build and like could run, could throw forever, but not really that accurate. I just feel like somebody is going to watch that tape, or maybe they're going to like watch the NFL live coverage and be like, oh shit, we might miss out if we don't get this guy. But I could very easily see him being somebody who's drafted in the fifth round and is like one of those guys that's on practice squads for the next 5 years. Because there's like something there.
Again, the arm is super impressive. He had the highest velocity throw, 62 miles per hour, only 1 mile per hour higher than JJ McCarthy, by the way. Just saying.
He'd be a great Raider in 05.
Yeah, no. I honestly was watching him and I was like, man, Al Davis would have fucking loved the shit out of him, man.
Yeah, he would have tackled him on the field inside.
He would have been like, you're a Raider. He goes, well, I haven't even been drafted yet. I'm taking you with the first round pick. Like, it's just so funny.
Cam and Darius Hayward Bay right next to each other, just like every play. It's like, all right, just run straight.
We're running vertical routes every single fucking game. Yeah, it's amazing. I think everything I've heard, a lot of people were very much quickly kind of pulling the Anthony Richardson thing with him, that like he was going to be a guy that kind of rose once everybody got their hands on him and saw him throw live. And like, it means you didn't watch Anthony Richardson last year, because like there was so much more nuance to Anthony Richardson's game than Joe Milton. Milton, by the way, 5 years in college. That's another thing. Richardson had like 12 games under his belt.
Yeah.
And Milton's been in the league, been in college for like 5 years, and he barely even saw the field. So, I mean, it tells you after a while, like, if you're not able to get on the field, there's a reason.
I mean, he transferred from Michigan and didn't even win the job against Hendon Hooker. So, and then finally got in and was fine. It was pretty pedestrian. It's pretty average numbers. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I do think that somebody will like see it as like what it can be and overbuy.
I apologize. He was in college for 6 years, three years in Michigan and 3 years at Tennessee. And he started 1 year.
I don't think you're sorry for that one.
I'm not. No, it's just there's my point anymore. He was really, but the thing is, like last year when he played for Hendon Hooker, I think he had like no interceptions. Yeah, it was like double digit touchdowns, no interceptions. Everyone was like, oh, this is the guy to watch next year. And then it's just like just underwhelming, and it's like you can't drop it in the bucket, man. Like he's just like he's fastball all day long. So
yeah.
It's he's got it, again, if someone can work with him and figure out how to like take some of that off and get more accurate, which does happen in the league. If you can get him on day three, he's an interesting project. If you got a guy who will bang the table for him, but like if you're talking about day two, no, I'm not interested.
Yeah. He's got a long road to develop, and that's the problem.
It's going to take years.
His advanced age. He's the guy that makes.
He's already pretty old too.
That's the thing. He's
going to be 24. Yeah,
he's that guy that you're like, this is why you don't draft old quarterbacks, because if they don't already have all that upside, you have to instill that into them and get them to that level first. And
yeah,
some of those habits are just going to be too hard at that. Being
it's,
that old,
yeah, it's again, like it's not some 20-year-old kid. Like that's why, like with Richardson, everyone was like, "Oh, he's like so." I'm like, he's like 20, like he's barely played. Like you got to give him some time. And like there's so much there. It was just kind of like a footwork issue with him, but it was like correctable. Mm-hmm. And like you saw, like the promise that he had last year before he got injured. So like you know, there's something. Obviously, there was something there. Milton is not even on the same like playing field as Anthony Richardson. So. Who is like, so like, if we want to start with quarterbacks, was there a guy that kind of like maybe caught your interest that you weren't really thinking too much about that kind of like caught your eye? Or
I mean, from a physical standpoint, what's his name?
That guy, yeah.
Slovis. I was shocked actually at how well he tested out some stuff.
Yeah.
I won't say I was totally impressed. I'm just saying I was a little bit more surprised at how well he did. I think he had a decent combine from a combine perspective.
He's definitely athletic. He's definitely athletic. He's a guy, like, again, I remember watching him at USC the other year, and you know, he's a run of the mill guy. I think he'll probably be like a he might be able to carve a backup role, but he's definitely got some athleticism to him for sure.
Q, did you feel that Spencer Rattler lived up to what you were expecting, or did he kind of flounder in his opportunity there?
I don't think it really changed my opinion too much. I mean, he definitely has a good arm, and that's the one thing. I think the thing with Rattler for me is that people are just overthinking it a little too much with him, and I understand why, but like the point I keep pushing to people is like, undefeated at Oklahoma, he got benched. Like they didn't lose. He just kind of underwhelmed in some of those games. And then he goes to South Carolina, and like the numbers, you know, if you're looking at the numbers, they're not going to look great. But like, what did he, other than Xavier Leggett, he had nobody to throw to. The offensive line, not good. Playing in the SEC at South Carolina, again, not a top tier program in the SEC. It's a tough division. Honestly, I think like he fared pretty well. He is an older prospect. There were some maturity issues with him. But if you're talking about a guy that was, again, everyone was saying last year he was going to be the number one pick in the draft preseason, right? Because of the Oklahoma thing. And then it just didn't happen because he got benched. Caleb Williams comes in and just dominates at Oklahoma. And now, you know, he had to go to South Carolina. And, you know, it's, again, if he's matured, which I think a lot of people have said that he has, you know, he's learned a lot over the last few years. Who amongst us at 21 years old were, you know, the most mature people? I definitely wasn't. If everybody believes that he's kind of turned the corner that way, he's got the physical play. I mean, like, he's got the arm, he's got everything you want, and you're going to get him at a discount because he's going to be there in round two, round three, maybe towards the end, like, of day two. And if he's there on day three, like, you know, round four type of scenario, like, I mean, it is a fucking steal in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with Spencer Rattler as kind of that dark horse guy that will impress people. They said that Michael Penix's medical came back and it was promising. So people were kind of impressed with that.
He's got a fucking cannon.
Yeah. Cannon. I know that.
Yeah, continue.
I know that people were not like expecting a ton from Sam Hartman, and I expected just a little bit more than what he was able to do.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, I watched him at Wake Forest like be very, very competent at quarterback, and I feel like when he went to Notre Dame, things kind of trended backwards, and now he's backed into the combine, and there was nothing there that was really impressive, and it was disappointing because I thought that he was going to be somebody that, you know, has gone to some, went to Wake Forest, not exactly a talent pool there, but went to Notre Dame, and it would be an opportunity for him to shine, and they just didn't really play his kind of game there.
No,
but I was hoping that there was going to be something a little bit more there, and like the throws that he was making, a lot of the measurables, I was just like, man, I don't know if you got it, kiddo.
You know that meme, get ready to learn Chinese, you know, Adam Silver?
Yeah.
Get ready to host The Bachelor, buddy, because that's what you're going to be doing in a couple of years.
Yeah,
you'll be hosting The Bachelor.
I don't think he's going to get drafted. So
no, I don't think so. He's again, like the arm, like it looks rough coming out. Like that ball comes.
Throws it like rough. Right here, too, and he's pushed. It's not like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he looks like he's like almost like dipping his shoulder into it. It's very like you shouldn't be a shoulder thrower.
Shot putter for a
It looks like a worse version of Phillip Rivers.
It weirdly enough, right? Yeah, it's very awkward looking and it didn't come out well. Like at least with Rivers, like he was throwing a fucking bullet. Like, you know, you can at least excuse it and say like it's just a weird delivery, but
yeah.
Yeah. Guy for me that really underwhelmed and I was already not a big fan was Bo Nix. A lot of weird throws and like,
yeah,
I there's nothing for me to get excited about with Bo Nix because like, I know everyone keeps saying like, oh, you know, I love the amount of time he played in the SEC at Auburn And then he dominated Oregon. But I think with Oregon, because like, again, they throw a lot of screens and a lot of bubbles, you know, and everything like that. You're kind of protected in that offense. And like, he can throw it deep, but he's like, he's not, I think some people think that he's got that like crazy big arm. And like, I like, cause he looks like he's like kind of a stocky dude, but his arm is kind of like, eh. So.
Yeah. I mean, his, that write up on NFL.com is perfect for him when it comes to the weaknesses. And Q, you had mentioned like they throw a lot of screens at Oregon. The first bullet, nearly 30% of his passes in 2023 were thrown behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. He's a line of scrimmage merchant. That's what I was saying the entire time, is that like, I need to see more. And like, that was the problem, I think, when I had with when he, I mean, obviously, like, you look at his numbers at Oregon, it's fucking video game numbers, you know, but like, it just doesn't translate when you really kind of like dig into it. If you're talking, I think he's more like a round two, round three guy who's going to go in round one. Like, that's just what it is. So,
yeah, who's a guy who probably should sit for a year.
For sure. Like, I think like, I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up in like New Orleans. Like, he just seems like a New Orleans quarterback to me.
Yeah, it's like throwing 1,000 interceptions.
Like behind Derek Carr for 2 years, you know, like it just seems like it's going to happen.
Is he from Mississippi or Georgia or?
I think he's from Alabama.
I think he's from Alabama. Yeah, because he went to Auburn, and
yeah, that's why he went there.
Yeah,
yeah. His, I mean, when they were deep bombing it, it was all over the place. It was a real bad look for him. Just trying to find consistency and just throw to the same spot, right? Because they get two or three throws in a row, right? Just put it in the same spot over and over again. And he just failed to do that each time, and it was kind of brutal watching.
Gatto, what about you? Who was somebody that you saw that you were jazzed about?
In terms of quarterback?
Yeah.
No, I said, I mean, I was shocked. I was slightly surprised by Lovis there. But, you know, again, I think Michael Penix has an elite arm, but he doesn't have elite habits. He's a little like he
doesn't have atomic habits.
His footwork is to be desired. And I think there's like some bad, he doesn't really use, because he has so much upper body strength to throw that ball, he's not doing the right things with his legs, and that could be problematic. I mean, again, the guy has an arm and a half. It's just the other parts of his game that are very important at the next level, and that's also the problem.
Yeah, I think the thing about him, and I'm going to look this up real quick, but I mean, I remember when he played at Indiana, and granted, he had a bunch of injuries that ended those seasons.
Yeah.
But there was nothing that was like terribly inspiring from those. And I want to just speculate here, and I hope he does well. Like all of these guys, I hope they make it, and I hope they do well. I hope they get lots of money. But is this a byproduct of him playing on a better team, which never hurts, but also having a potential top 10 wide receiver you're throwing to for 2 years, and then another guy who's like a fringe first round guy?
I mean, that's the been the thing I've been saying, is that,
like, oh, by the way, having a lineman who's going to go in the top 10.
I'm saying right now, I would take JJ McCarthy over Michael Penix. And I know that is going to be controversial to a lot of people, and that's fine. I don't mind being controversial.
I don't know if it necessarily is at this point.
It may not be consensus wise. Right. Yeah. With the league, it may not be controversial, but I think with some people it is. And like, I understand why people might feel that way, but like, the reality of it is that if you look at those guys side to side, right, what is McCarthy's specialize, what's his best trait? It's throwing on the run. He can throw on the run better than most guys in his class, right? The ability to go either way, left or right, and be able to like throw an accurate ball off platform. And that's like, that's what you need in this league. Penix has had three season ending injuries. He had the shoulder, he had the right ACL twice he tore. And also, not to mention, Tom, that you said playing with a top 5 pick in Roma Dunze, or top 10 pick, Polk, who's going to go probably top 90, top 75, mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. The best offensive line in college football. Fontenot, who is playing his left tackle, is going to be a first round pick. I mean, that offensive line is a fucking beast. And one thing Michael Penix cannot do very well, from what I've seen, is throw on the run. When we saw the national championship game, he struggled because of the pressure. Now imagine you put Michael Penix on the Giants, right? And now imagine
running for your life constantly.
When you're running for your life and not being able to throw as well off platform, you're going to see that if you can get him on a team, and that's why we talked about it last week with the Miami Dolphins. Like I said, if you replace him with Tua, like I feel like it's almost the same guy, you know, to where with a guy like, you know, you put him on a certain, like he's going to be more specific to a team rather than like a guy you can just like with Caleb Williams where you can put him anywhere. So I think McCarthy, I think, is just more versatile. Like I think you can just fit him in pretty much any offense. So that's where, like, I know it's going to be controversial, but I just, it's the reality.
Yeah. Tyler just mentioned Slick Ricky from University of Florida. We talked about Ricky Pearsall last week.
Yeah, I like him.
I think we're all in agreement here that he is probably going to be a guy who's going to go round three.
Tested better, too, than I thought he would.
But he is going to be a steal. Like, he's going to be a guy that's going to – I think his skill set is going to translate really well to the NFL. And, I mean, he's a playmaker. I mean, the games where it mattered, where he was able to be out there, he was effective. And – I think teams are looking for a guy like that who can make a play in a big moment.
Are we moving on to wide receivers? Because I feel like there's a lot to talk about here.
We certainly can.
I will have a request for people to stop comparing Ladd McConkey to Cooper Kupp.
Because
they're white guys.
Yeah.
There is literally nothing. McConkey is nothing like Cooper Kupp in form of play. But I will say McConkey, one of my stars from the combine for sure.
Yeah, he was pretty impressive. I felt they did great things. Michael Tyler, Hunter, are you talking about Pearsall or are you talking about McConkey right now?
I mean, Tyler's a University of Florida fan. I doubt very much he wants to talk about UGA players.
I mean, but listen, I want to put it out there that, like, I think people are really sleeping on this kid.
I think this entire draft class is like ripe with wide receiver talent. I mean, it's absolute studs the whole way.
It's about 10 or 12 deep before you start going like, all right, like maybe not the best prospect, but like there's a lot of guys.
You're the coach's kid, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, but even like when we get down, like Tom and I have mentioned, we're not big Keon Coleman fans. But like the fact that he's going to be like wide receiver, like on my list, he's going to be like wide receiver 10 or 12 is pretty fucking jarring because like he is quite good. He's just not my type of, he's not my flavor. Mm.
I mean, I think we're missing a big highlight moment though, and that's in Xavier Worthy.
Mm.
Like, oh, it's just like not an old, talk like, about that on the reaction show to the NFL Combine.
Yeah.
You know, just a ho-hum 4-2-1, no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. I mean, in general, if I had to say there was a college team that showed up for this Combine, it had to be Texas.
Hmm.
I mean,
they didn't show up for those games, so yeah.
they all tested really, really well.
They did.
But I don't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah, I think that like Xavier Worthy is somebody who, you know, I think he's got a lot of like, he's got a lot of potential. My concern are people are going to make the broad assumption that a 4-2-1 is going to translate to the NFL and it's going to be no big deal.
Skill sets or of the combine exercises, that are ran the correlation between 40 time, which is like the one of the bigger ones that people pay attention to, seems to have the least relevance to success once getting into the NFL.
No, because these guys train for that, right? Like,
and a lot of them have track backgrounds and all of that to begin with.
I mean, you also look at too, like, I don't know if you guys listen to Bomani Jones's show, but he has he's got Dominique Foxworth on the show every Friday, and Dominique was a cornerback in the NFL, and he said that he trained specifically before the combine to run a fast 4.3 40. And I mean, these guys are practicing for it. Like, they now know and understand, like, that of all of these drills, one could make the argument that the 40 stands out the most, has probably the least impact on your field, on field play, the most impact on your draft status. So they train for it. Like, the one thing that I think is the most, my opinion, is probably going to be like broad and shuttle, or no, vertical and shuttle for me.
The two that correlate the most, believe it or not, are bench press and vertical.
Interesting.
I think all of this is irrelevant, honestly, because like now that they have this, the GPS on these guys in college, like they can literally track how fast they were playing in games. And like, I don't care what you ran in shorts and like a t-shirt and, you know, on a single track running on a straight line, like show me, you know, you taking a slant route to the house, you know, like that's what I want to know is your GPS numbers. That's why, like, you know, we tell you, you had pointed out, Tom, Keon Coleman ran a 4.6. And I was like, I don't care about that at all, because they tested him at the gauntlet. You know, if anybody doesn't know what the gauntlet is, it's basically like when you catch the ball and you're basically running a straight line, catching the balls. He ran faster than Troy Franklin did, who ran a 4.4. So it's like, show me his GPS numbers and show me that, like, at his top speed when he gets running out in a game, show me where he ranks. Like, so the 40 numbers just feel so relevant now.
Did you guys catch during the QB and wide receiver sessions? You had Kurt Warner, you had Jerry Rice, and the whole crew there just kind of talking, and there was almost a masterclass going on of just explaining, I guess, like fundamental aspects of how a player moves, acts, works a field. And, you know, I think a part of why you do this isn't necessarily for the numbers, right? I don't think NFL head coaches, GMs are coming here necessarily to see the numbers as much as to get this final confirmed eye test. When we take away the essence of a football game, even though it is not a great way of testing your experiment of whether this person's capable for you, the ability to give them the opportunity to show that they run that straight line that keeps a defender from getting underneath them, right? Or that you don't see like bad, just in general, just bad uses of your motion, bad uses of your energy.
Yeah.
I think that eye test, when I'm watching these guys in the combine, like, yes, I'm impressed by their numbers, right? Who's not going to be impressed by a 4.2 140, right? But
it's nice to watch.
It is, but the thing that I want to see is how fluid are their motions. When I'm looking at an offensive lineman running his 40, like he doesn't need to sprint 40 yards down the field like that ever. But if he's got like a weird step, right, that's a potential injury down the road.
Yeah, or it's choppy or like wasted motion. No, it makes sense.
And those are the things you want to see. That's what you're looking for.
You know, you had mentioned that when we were talking about it in Discord over the weekend, and I disagreed with you, but shortly after that, they were talking about something. Remember the comeback drills that they're doing with the quarterbacks and the wide receivers where they had the cone and they had to like hook back? They were talking about like quiet feet and like running up to that cone. Like, can you hear that guy like stomping his feet to slow down and making that turn to catch? And
it balances off.
Yeah. But I mean, if his feet are quiet, it throws off the DB who's covering him because they don't know what's happening because they might have their eyes somewhere else. But also too, like if you're stomping, that also means that you have no control because you're forcing yourself to slow down. So
Michael Irving making that point?
I don't remember who said it, but I remember hearing it. I was like, wow, that's actually a different way of thinking about this.
Because you want to fake that run and you want them to believe you're going deep, right? Mm-hmm. And then you don't want to give them their heads turned the other way because they're trying to keep with you, right? Or stay ahead of you. And so you need to be able to have those quiet feet and deaccelerate in a way in which doesn't tip them off, because it's that fraction of a second that's going to make the difference between that catch or not, you know? And it's 100% accurate. I really recommend anyone that wants to hear some great insights from some of the best that have played at those positions, go listen to, I think it was session one of the quarterbacks and wide receivers. And just hearing how, you know, Jerry Rice is explaining why a lot of guys these days, when they're making these over the shoulder catches, they're doing it with like their hand up over their head, and how that's incorrect and how it needs to be both hands down below, because it gives you the second opportunity to catch the ball. It doesn't you're not blinding yourself to the football this way. Things like that, that I think a lot of players are either already have that refinement and natural understanding of the game, or they have to learn it, and that's going to take time. Right. And a team is going to look for that. A team wants to see that.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody would know, it'd be him. So,
yeah. And by the way, his kid, unreal.
Yeah.
A bigger, stronger, more athletic him. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. I mean, that was a nice thing to watch too. Particularly for some of those guys too, because it was really nice to see some, like, high level wide receiver talent just go out there and be absolute maniacs. And getting back to like the 40 time stuff, I think there's only like a few people that benefit from that. The guys that maybe like are fringe draftable guys, but also the ones that need to go out there and kind of prove it. I know that there was a lot of concern about Xavier Leggett and his true speed. People wanted him to go out there and like run something that was like a 4.4 or better. And he ended up running like a 4.3 at 227 pounds. Yeah. I think that kind of solidifies all of the thoughts and hesitations people had around him. I mean, he's pretty good.
Feels like people are kind of overthinking. The production's not there, right? But like people are overthinking it a little bit with him.
I mean, to that point, Q, people are really psyched about Adonai Mitchell too, but he's only had one good year too. He's a transfer from Georgia. He's a one-hit wonder guy too. So
I think the interesting thing about those Texas guys is that one thing I've been seeing, and like I saw people pointing it out on Twitter, and I kind of like started watching it, and like, I don't know if this is like a taught thing or it's just how they are. They run their routes at different speeds. And some people perceive that as like running a route at a certain way, right? But some people have perceived it as being like taking plays off. If they know beforehand going into it that they're not going to get the ball, they run a route differently, which again can be a cue to a defense like, oh, he's not running full speed. I know he's not getting the ball, and maybe like take the play. To where a guy like Javon Baker, like I've watched UCF, like I love, like he runs like a fucking demon every single fucking play. So I don't know. It's there's been some knocks on Worthy and Mitchell that do give me a little bit of pause with those guys. So
my one question on that is, are they giving you just an example per game, or are you watching? Are you watching through all of it? Because this sounds like it could be also an over. This is that big brain football stuff that gets people in trouble, right? So like you deliberately underrun a route early in the game to tip your hat, like it's you're not going to be the guy. And then later in the game, they come back to this and you put on the Jets when they've kind of given you a little space because they think you're not gonna.
It could be,
and you're just not seeing that because this is what that angle of that video is, right?
I will say, yes, that's a possibility. But remember, this was a big knock on George Pickens coming out of Georgia because everyone looked at him and they're like, you're 6'3", you run a 4.3 something, and you're big and you're physical and you can knock anyone over. And it's like, why does it look like you're taking plays off? Why does it look like you're not running as hard as you can? And again, with Pickens in the league, we've seen games where he goes for 200 yards and he dominates people. And then there's games where it's like zero catches for 0 yards. And it's like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
So I think that's the big thing with Mitchell that makes me nervous is like, I look at him and I'm like, are you going to be a George Pickens at the next league? Like if you're not getting the ball, if the game plan is not centered around you every single game, like, are you going to be okay with that? It's just, I would say it's not something that I'm like taking him off a board or like clearly not. I'm just saying that like, it definitely gives me a little bit more pause than I think I had. Because like he is such a physical freak and it's like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah. I think, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I feel like we have this conversation a lot in college too, where always. Guys are taking plays off more than they would be in the NFL because they know that they're blue chip players and like, you know, they want to be out there making plays and stuff like that versus, you know, in the NFL, you see guys taking plays off, like they get immediately benched, but the difference is like, you know, you could be a top 25 pick in the draft going up against a DB who's going to be working for Northwestern Mutual in 6 months. Like you can get away with those things because the output is going to be way better than like dealing with the bullshit. Anybody else from the wide receiver class that we were looking at? And
I want to say that this is not going to be shocking, but Roma Dunze, man, is man. He, I was saying this over the weekend that like, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one receiver. Some people are now starting to say Neighbors is, I don't want to overcomplicate it. I think Harrison is the number one, but like Dunze, like he feels like the consensus three, but man,
he's going to give people a run for their money.
I mean, the production is there. He's 6'3", 212, everything measured out. But then he runs like, again, like I don't care too much about it, but a 4.45 is like exactly where I kind of had him going. But he ran a 3-cone at 6.88. And then he literally stayed after and was running the 3-cone continuously because he's like, I can definitely get to a 6.5.
Yeah. Which
he's not getting a 6.5. But like at 6'3", running a 6.88 at 6'3 is – and 212 pounds, like the biggest knock on like a guy like DK Metcalf coming out was that like his 3-cone was like a 7.33. Like the short area quickness wasn't really there. Mm-hmm. But Dunze is just, he's man. Like I really struggle because like he's a potential giant target at 6. And like, I do go back between Neighbors and him. It's really tough.
I will say too, it was nice to know, like he knew that time was not going to be recorded. It was just for himself.
It was just him doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
team captain, I was like, also.
It speaks so many volumes on a different level, right? It's the test that I think people are there to really hear is this guy, his mind is in being the best he can be, right? That's
already knew he was good, and like it just solidified of how good he is, and like he looks like a guy to me. Like my comp to him, if you want a comp for him, and it's not an exact comp, but like I said, DeAndre Hopkins reminds me a lot of Nuck. But like he looks like a guy who's going to play 12 years. He's going to be like close to 1,000 yards every year when healthy. And like he's going to be a quarterback's best friend. Like it's like why I struggle because like I love Malik Neighbors. And I think there's a genuine case you can make for Neighbors being wide receiver one in this class. He's so exciting. But like there's something about Adunze just being so fucking consistent every single year. It's just like it's tough, man. It's a good problem to have, right? Because like there's three guys that I think any other year are wide receiver one in their class. Like if Adunze next year most likely would be wide receiver one by a far margin.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of these guys did well just being normal there, right? Like just going up, showing out. And I mean, that's the one. A lot of people were kind of bagging on Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers for not doing any of the measurements and stuff. It's like, it's only going to hurt you. Like, it's only going to drag your stock down. Go ahead, Gatto.
Just going back to that real quick, I feel like there is just this bare minimum level that I think people want at it. Like, they're not expecting you to do everything because they know you're a top pick, but the thing with the least effort and you're not willing to do it rubs certain people the wrong way. Granted, it's the media and they make a living off of having this information and then talking about it excessively, like we're doing right now. I think that there's like just, you know, coming and doing that type of stuff. Like, why even show up in the first place to not do anything? Like, it's kind of,
I mean, you have meetings with teams, waste your time. Like, and I think there were plenty of guys who volunteered for the media day and they said absolutely stupid shit. And teams are going to, like, that one kid from Texas Tech, like, yeah, I think the earth is flat. I don't think space is real. Like,
I thought that was funny.
That's funny, but a team is going to be look like a scout is going to look no at risk. It and be like, you're unserious and everybody else is taking it seriously, but you're not. And I might be overthinking it, but I also know this
just
is
a little.
I mean, this is also an entire industry that overthinks shit too.
By the way, again, I don't want to keep talking about Roma Dunze because I love Roma Dunze. If it isn't clear already, but like,
it's a fun name to say too.
It is. Like, he's got, dude, wide receiver. Like, all these guys passed the name check, by the way. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze. Those are all pro wide receiver names right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I do love that somebody asked him, do you think you could fly a plane if like a pilot got sick or something?
And he said no. And they
said, we're all going down. I was like, wide receiver one right there, man.
That's real right there.
He's
just like me.
He's awesome.
I had one guy that I was like quietly rooting for, and that's Tez Walker from North Carolina. He's a guy who bounced around for a while, had some personal issues happen when I think he was at Toledo or Kent. And was able to make his way back to Chapel Hill. He's a Charlotte kid too. Got on the field, I think, like after week six in the college football season. And I mean, his numbers are interesting to say the least. And I'm hoping that somebody sees those and says, yeah, this is somebody we want to hang around with. So I guess my question is, like, do you guys have somebody that might not be Q? I know that you are fully pilled on Roma Dunze, but is there anybody else that you guys are looking at and you're rooting for that might not be one of those top three guys? Somebody that you just kind of like latched onto, like, I like this guy. I want to see him do well.
I got real interested in Mo Kamara, watching him. I thought he had a really good combine, and I was just like interested. I started looking at some of his highlight clips, and he's a stud, man. Absolute stud.
Who is this?
Muhammad Kamara from Colorado State. And
I don't think I know him.
I would say take a look at him. He was someone who I felt like this was the question I wanted to talk about, was like anybody that like you didn't know or didn't see. He's one of them. Chris Jenkins. I as long as he doesn't end up an Eagle. I'm kind for him. I like him. I was watching running backs earlier today, and the person who really, really like opened my eyes was this guy Dylan Lobb. He's from like New Hampshire State.
Hmm. Oh, Dobb.
East Nathan New Hampshire Dobb. State.
No, University of New Hampshire.
No. Dylan Lobb, L-A-U-B-E, yes. And the guy runs in a way
from West Hampton. We got to root for him.
Yeah, man. I like it was something that, you know, like that eye test, he absolutely secured it for me. I don't know what it, the way he hit his cuts, the way he did the drills, the footwork, the acceleration, and he's probably one of the best pass catchers from the running back class.
6'8", 4 on a three cone is pretty damn good.
So question for you, Gatto. It was real good stuff. For the folks that don't know who he is, it's Dylan Lobb, University of New Hampshire, West Hampton. Well, for the people that don't know, who would be a good comp in the NFL for them as a reference point?
Oh man, and the way Danny he's Woodhead? Running,
I just go with white running.
Yeah, actually. Though the funny thing was, I was like, he does have a bit of a.
He looks like
Danny I wouldn't Woodhead. Put him on a McCaffrey level, but. But he does, yeah, yeah. No, there's a smoothness to his run too. That, I'm trying to think who else this. There's a little bit of maybe a Tony Pollard going on there.
Okay,
I see that.
Okay. Compact, he's powerful he's, runner.
Yeah, smaller guy.
Yeah, but he's got 5'10", he's got a big six. Frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like a one cutter type of guy.
23 reps too. But on someone the bench, who, so.
Strong, yeah, that was the other thing. And I think his explosiveness, his vertical was really good. So, that's somebody I think might be a dark horse that we'll see, like the Rams pick up.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. For me, I have another one, and the guy that I am kind of rooting for here is the running back out of Kentucky, Ray Davis. He has he's played at Temple, he played at Vanderbilt, and he just transferred to Kentucky. I have his numbers pulled up, and 2019 at Temple, 193 carries, 936 yards, 8 touchdowns. 2020 season, he only played 4 games, transfers to Vanderbilt, has a quiet 2021. 2022, 232 carries, 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns, goes to Kentucky. Almost 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. Like, he's somebody who, for Kentucky, they didn't really have a great team this year, but he was one of their bright spots and a good guy to watch during games. I hope somebody sees him as, you know, this could be a nice, serviceable back for us. A little bit of age on him, but all the same, I think that he could be really good.
I like that. Yeah, for me, I think it's this is not really like, cause like I didn't know anything about this kid, but I'm like excited to dig in because I want to see if the athletic traits match what he did at the combine. It's a defensive tackle from Iowa, Logan Lee. Mm-hmm. This kid blew up the combine, but like the numbers don't really like kind of match like apparently what, like he's not considered like a high end pick, but 6'5", 280. He ran a 4.37 in the short shuttle. For context, that is the 7th best for a defensive tackle since 2010. He also ran a 7.16 three cone. When I talk about three cone, it's like the best indicator for me as far as potential success as an edge rusher. If you're running a 7 or under, that's usually like a – because, again, you're talking about running a corner, right? Like the ability to bend an edge. He ran a 7.16 at 280 pounds. 6th best for a defensive tackle since 2010. For example, Jared Verse, who is the Florida State edge, who's going to probably go top 10, I think had a bad combine for the most part. Mm-hmm. He ran a 7.33.
And Lee was a 7.16, right?
Yeah, so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in general, there was just – if you're looking at – just numbers and how positional players did, I feel like there was the edge group, there was just that core dominant group, and they just kept performing above the rest, right? There's like 6 or 7 guys in that group that are just tremendous athletes, and then everybody else is literally a tier below them. in performance. And that was something that was very noticeable with that group in comparison to some of the other groups that we had.
Gatto, there was a stat for Chop Robinson from Penn State that he is one of only two players in combine history to be 250 pounds or heavier, have a 10 and a half broad jump, and a sub 4.540.
Yeah,
the other guy
Who was it?
The other guy was Vernon Davis.
Really?
So, yeah. Wow. If you want to talk about like just athletic freaks, he's a perfect example.
To be in that conversation.
And sorry,
yeah.
No, I mean, I was gonna say, like, we were a little critical of Chop Robinson, just more so that team last year. His numbers did not really reflect like how good of an athlete he is, and just seeing those things there. And I know you could train for this stuff too. And again, we've talked about this until we're blue in the face, that some of these don't necessarily or will equate to the field, but it still doesn't hurt to be one of only two people to do something. So I think he's definitely made a lasting impression, but I agree with you too. I mean, there's guys on here, and I would probably have the cutoff at probably Dallas Turner, those top four guys from the edge position. And
Dallas Turner actually put on a great show in that.
No. I was gonna say, like, those four guys, like Verse, Robinson, Latu, Turner are probably the four that absolutely showed out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and again, like,
this and your is guy where... Darius Robinson, Q, he did a very good job too.
Telling you
the I think that too, the thing is like when you're watching them and seeing like, are they using extra steps to get there? Is there a smoothness in their best? Like watching them do those circle drills, right? And you see the guys that kind of like, they're slipping all over the place. They're like they're not making clean cuts. They're not refined in these movements. Like that speaks more than the actual finishing, you know, because what is a couple fractions of a second, especially when you slap on the pads or you have someone in your face, but the ability to have that, you know, coordination is just vital. Right. And
well, I mean, you said it perfectly. Like, it's about coordination. And I think in a position like that, where you are having to attack another player, wasted energy is an opportunity for an offensive lineman to take advantage of that. Like, if you take an extra step, that's an extra step. Or if you move your arm in the wrong way, if you shift your weight in the wrong way, like, somebody can take advantage of that. And it is really interesting to see these guys who are 6'4", 250, 260, 270 pounds, if they have really good balance, that's something to like keep an eye on. And a lot of those circle drills kind of illuminate that for some of these guys. Like, some of them do, some of them don't. And like,
yeah,
I think for a drill like that, again, you can train for it, but having good balance will typically translate from high school to college to the pros.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think with Verse, like, I'm not like, he's a beast, and like I like him a lot, but like the 4.44 in the short shuttle, that's 43rd percentile, 7.33 in the three cone, 30th percentile. I just think that it's going to require more. It's going to require a double back on him, and just to see if I don't see any limitations athletically on tape. I didn't see any. That's why like it was so surprising. I had to step away for a second. Did you guys end up talking about what was his name? This dude was insane. Hold on one second. Braden Fisk from Florida State. Braden Fisk,
tackle.
Yeah.
Dude, what the tackle. Fuck was that, man?
Top five in almost every category or in every exercise. He's just a freak, a pure athletic freak.
It was crazy to see, because like he really is kind of like a very stocky dude. And like, I love Florida State players typically. Like, they usually translate very well. He is an older dude. He had back-to-back seasons with six sacks. So I think he's going to be one of those guys who made himself some money this year, this offseason. So pretty interesting to see from him. And also Chop, I also want to know Chop Robinson, 1.54 in a 10-yard split. Fastest ever for an edge over 250 pounds. Just like,
yeah.
I also was not the biggest Chop Robinson guy. So like, I'm going to dig into him soon because he could be a potential guy for the Giants in like round two, if he gets there. So I do want to specifically for my own fandom, get a better look at him.
Q, when we're done here, I'll share that. He is one of only two people to do three things at the combine.
No shock to me at all that he is an absolute freak athletically. So, because like it, you saw it, but like, I just wonder about to play on the field more than anything.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Anything else, guys?
I do want to point out there, you know, as far as like, because the run, like the one thing is like, we notice how we have not talked at all about tight ends in this class, and we haven't talked about really about running backs either. Because it's not a very strong class. I just don't think it is. But one guy I want to point out, I talked to you guys about this guy before, Notre Dame kid, running back, Audric Estime.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to end up being one of those things that ends up like somebody ends up getting a steal every year. There's always some team that ends up getting some running back late in the draft. It ends up becoming a really good starter. And everybody's like, how the fuck did this happen? Audric Estime ran a 4.71 at the combine, which is obviously for a running back, not good. 5'11", 221. He is a monster. He also tested out great every other metric. 1.58 in the 10-yard split. He had a 38-inch yard vert, 10.5 on the broad jump, 23 reps, 225. He's going to be a guy, I don't know if it's going to slip him. I don't know if he ends up falling because of this, but last year he had 1,300 rushing yards, 18 rushing touchdowns. He is a fucking bulldozer.
I would be curious if he runs at their pro day.
I imagine he will. I imagine he will, because especially if he gets any feedback that the 40 yard might hurt him. But if you watch more than 5 minutes of this guy and you're not convinced that he could be a starter in this league, I don't know what to tell you. Because again, not to compare, but Kyren Williams was a kid that came out of Notre Dame too. I really liked him, really, really fast. And then he goes and runs like a 4.65 at the combine. Everyone was like, oh, maybe he's not as good. And then, but everything else tested out well, right? Like the broad jump, everything tested out well, except for the 40-yard dash. And then now Kyren Williams, look at him. He's a big-time starter for the Rams. So don't overthink it with these guys.
Yeah. Well, they're used to running in mud in Notre Dame, so.
Yeah. Exactly.
Was there any defensive standouts? Just as a last closing here, anybody worthy mention?
Somebody got hurt, didn't they?
There's a few injuries. It was a shame because somebody ran, I forget who it was. They ran a really good 40 time and then they pulled a quad. There was a Jones fracture. I forget who it was. Was it Chris?
Was that Terry? Terry and Arnold with the fracture?
I don't recall right at the moment. There was a few of them coming, I think, specifically after the Fashanu and Mims
were quite, two. I think Fashanu was okay. I think it was just a Nate Wiggins, the Clemson kid. He ran really, really well, and the tape's good on him. He ran a 4.28, 36-inch yard vert. He's a bit of a smaller guy, 173 pounds he weighed in. But really, really, really and then I'm sad we didn't get to see Cooper DeJean, the corner from Iowa. He's still recovering from an injury. I imagine he will run. A lot of these defense backs were hurt. Cooley McKinstry didn't test because of injuries.
That's who it was. That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah. So there's a lot of guys that I think we're going to have to kind of circle back on once we start getting pro days going, you know? So that's the defensive back group is actually quite good. But it's just like, it's not getting a lot of buzz. I would say Javon Bouillard, again, another guy, I don't think he tested. I know he did. He did run 4.47. He was a guy at Georgia that I really liked. So there's a bunch of guys that I think that
we're going to see Cooley. Circling
back. Yeah, Cooley. Come on, man. The guy's name's Cooley. Yeah.
Awesome. I wanted to see Kool-Aid, man. I was thirsting for some Kool-Aid, and I didn't get it. I believe he is doing pro day.
If you're looking inside linebackers, inside linebacker is a bit of an underwhelming group, honestly. But there was a guy, Peyton Wilson from NC State.
Yeah,
he's really fun, and he ran a 4.43. Split was really good, vertical and everything like that. So he's kind of a fun guy if you really want to watch. And again, like between him and Trotter, there's not a ton of guys.
No.
Yeah, Trotter didn't do the 40-yard dash, vertical jump, or broad jump. He just did the cone drill and the shuttle and bench. And
he looked fine.
He did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, right? I'm not really – I don't really care when it comes to him because, like, again, he has a style of play, and that's really all you're going to really worry about. So,
I mean, I don't think his dad was, like, a physical specimen either. He was just a heady player that could, like – he played –
he was, like, 6'4", 265 pounds.
Just, I mean, a monster. Jeremiah Jr. is not that, but I think if you are a 6 foot middle linebacker, they will find a home for you because there's plenty of evidence of those guys work in the NFL.
Yeah, he definitely tested out like about where I expected, but if you just watch, like he's a fun guy to watch. But yeah, it's just this class is somewhat underwhelming in certain areas. Like I said, like tight end and running back. I think running back is pretty good, but the number one running back is Jonathan Brooks so far from Texas, and he's coming off an ACL tear. So it's like, it's just not the like last year. But again, if you're looking for weak spots, like ultimately, I'd rather my weak spots in the draft be running back and tight end than quarterback and wide receiver. So
yeah, I think that Trey Benson got a lot of attention.
Sorry.
I like Trey Benson.
Yeah, I was going to say that Trey Benson got a lot of attention. Isaac Garendo from Louisville put up some nice numbers too.
He tested out like his overall, like he was
his athleticism is like through the roof.
Yeah, they compared him to Jonathan Taylor as far as his numbers are concerned. And then there's like Marshawn Lloyd from USC. Bucky Irving did not test out well. But like there's a Frank couple Gore Jr. like I mean, come on. If he's anything like his pops, I mean but there's definitely some value guys here. It's just not as top heavy as it was last year. So
I'll tell you what, a value guy that I am interested in is Tyrone Tracy Jr. from Purdue. He was a wide receiver, I think, at Iowa. I could be wrong, but he transferred, swapped positions to running back, gained like 15 pounds in muscle.
Wow.
He is a guy that he's a guy that I'd be interested in. I think that like there's enough there for me that I'd want to learn more.
He had a 40-inch vertical. He's a pretty athletic dude. And he should have the hands for wide receiver. Better than the current Commander's backup running back.
Who will not be on the
league
team.
In the current league that we have too, it's kind of that's kind of like crack for a GM, a guy who can play both of those positions or at least adapt to what is commonly the swing routes that running backs run now. So
yeah, gotta have the ability, the versatility. Because again, like it's all about running back. What it is now, it's about carving out roles, right? Like finding yourself a role on the team, and no one wants to pay these guys $14 million anymore, unless you're Christian McCaffrey. So you got to find ways to stand out, and the way you do that is being a good pass catcher. So,
Mm-hmm.
It be like that sometimes.
Yeah,
it do be like that.
Anything else?
So any last remarks? Yeah.
Nope, I'm excited to see how the pro days go from here.
Yeah, I think that's
about a month between now and then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the next step at this point is seeing some of these pro days, particularly the guys who are not named Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, and Drake May, seeing what their pro days look like. But also some of those guys that didn't have great combines, are they going to be able to bounce back with better 40 times, just better overall, being in a more natural environment for them? It'll be interesting to see, but also some of the shenanigans that will happen with, like, what's going to be the lingering effects of these guys that were Showtime effectively at the combine, and if it's like, if it has a hangover effect on their draft status, and if these guys actually are going to get bumped up into the first round or move up a couple rounds because of their performance. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Playbreakers podcast. Next week, I believe you're all in for a treat because we're looking to begin our review to preview series, where we'll go through each division, talking about each team, worst to first, and discussing what they need to accomplish in the offseason so that they can make a bigger mark on the 2024-25 season. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like and subscribe. Tom?
I just wanted to say, we are not going to start with the NFC East. We are going to start with the other conference because the folks that listen to this and watch this probably want to fucking kill us at this point.
Yes. Yeah. We'll do you all a favor. We'll end there so you get plenty of juicy information about all the other teams out there. I don't know why I used the word juicy there. That just felt
wrong. Yeah, it was gross.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable now.
Yeah, I got to go take a shower after saying that on this live recording. But again, if you enjoyed this, like and subscribe to all our social outlets. You can find us pretty much everywhere. And we have a Discord where we have a fan section for each team. We are regularly updating with the latest news that breaks on there. It's a great place to just come have a discussion. And join us in all of the latest and greatest going on in the NFL and college football. So, again, thank you for listening and hope to have you back next week.
Thanks, y'all.
Peace.